Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Pop Culture Draft Night. I am your host and commissioner, Phil Rockwell, and we all float down here. You'll float too. With It Chapter 2 on the horizon, we thought it'd be a good time to have a Stephen King adaptation draft. So that's what we're doing tonight. With me tonight are two returning competitors. First up is our self-proclaimed biggest horror fan and participant in the last draft. That is Ryan Lutens. How are you doing, Ryan?
Not too bad. Thanks for having me.
And then, of course, we have the victor of the From Here to There draft, the champion.
Yes.
The Tom Hanks of the Front Row Network, Steve Sykes. Congratulations, Steve.
Well, thank you. Hey, that's a great way to start this cast out.
You are the first popular voted winner of Pop Culture Draft Night drafts. People love you, man.
Well, you know, that's greatness.
So I will be participating in the draft tonight, and because of that, I will go last. But our order is going to be Ryan, Steve, then myself. And without further ado, let's get cracking. Ryan, you have the number one pick. What are you going to do with yourself?
I am going to pick one of the best adaptations of a Stephen King work. And that, of course, is Rita Hayworth in The Shawshank Redemption. I'm picking The Shawshank Redemption from 1994.
Shawshank Redemption, the movie that people are still finding out is actually a Stephen King adaptation.
Not quite horror, but still some of his best writing.
It is. It's certainly the most well-received critically of all of the Stephen King adaptations.
Well, I applaud the pick. I applaud the pick. And if you were talking purely on the basis of what is the most quality adaptation, definitely Shawshank. It's critically beloved and everything else, but it's not very Stephen King to me. therefore, it wasn't number one on my list, but it's a solid pick.
I'll back it up later because there's something that I read. Stephen King has three choices for best adaptation, and this was his number one pick.
Mm. Well, I think people would think he was crazy if he didn't pick this one. But I get what Steve is saying, and I made a joke when I described this draft to some of the people at work. Is this the best Stephen King adaptation or the best Stephen King adaptation? Just because depending on how people interpret this question is going to dictate sort of where they go with it. So let's see where Steve wants to go with it.
Well, it's really funny that you mentioned that Shawshank is Stephen King's favorite adaptation. My lead pick is going to be among his least favorite adaptations. I'm going to go with The Shining from 1980.
Thanks for the clarification. That.
Yep.
Not the TV adaptation with Steven Weber?
It was okay, but there are so many things that are iconic about Stanley Kubrick's treatment, from Jack Nicholson's amazing performance to Kubrick's amazing visuals. It's just quintessential horror and damn good movie making.
And like you said, it is one of Stephen King's least favorite, if not his least favorite, but it is probably the only Stephen King adaptation to have developed something of a cult. There's actually a documentary that is based around the hidden messages of The Shining.
And that is fascinating. I have seen it.
Yeah, it's if you never get onto Reddit, this is a good chance to see what that sort of feels like when you go down the wormhole of of fan interpretation. So, thankfully, I have two picks now, because now I get to take what is one of my top 10 favorite movies of all time. It is the movie that is getting its chapter 2 coming up here in a matter of days, and that is It Chapter 1 from 2017. One of the things that I think Stephen King is truly gifted at is sort of the vagueness of fear and how it, just like Pennywise, can morph and change depending on its subject. And I thought it was nothing short of a masterpiece in terms of being a coming of age movie. And remarkably, it was a horror movie that ended on hope, which I would challenge anyone to come up with another example of that. Ryan.
You know, and that's a solid pick, especially with it chapter two coming out. And, you know, from what I said earlier, if I could, you know, if I could change something to be first pick, it would definitely be it. But I mean, just looking at its chapter two trailer, I'm super pumped, especially with all the reviews I'm hearing about Bill Hader, and how he is just a scene stealer. And somebody goes, well, is he going to be nominated for an Oscar? And I said, well, I don't know.
He has the talent.
Yeah.
If he doesn't get it for this, cause I haven't seen it, I don't know if it's worthy or not, but
right.
He has the talent to be one of those guys who goes from sketch comedy to being
serious,
seriously good actor. Watch Barry if you haven't.
Oh yeah.
Number two, I could go similar to it, but I'm going to go a different way and go with the most inexplicable entry in Rob Reiner's filmography. And that is his adaptation of Misery.
No.
Yeah. Which, that's a frustrating one.
Which won Kathy Bates an Academy Award. Just a really gnarly, trapped in a box type of film. And yeah, it's just two people playing off each other. And Rob Reiner did a hell of a job. And I would never have seen this from him in his career, but it was definitely one that I watched over and over and over. An encore staple. Early in my teens.
One of the unsung heroes of this, obviously Kathy Bates just dominates the movie, but James Caan, his performance is so nuanced. He brings out the jerkiness of the author, but he also has that vulnerability thing that you just feel horrible for him, particularly on the infamous hobbling. But his performance complements Kathy Bates so wonderfully.
I was just going to say that there's no two greater actors to put in a room with slow burn tension than those two. That scene where she's talking about his novel and all the swearing and how she just kind of blows up. And he's like, what is going on? I mean, it's the perfect chemistry for the perfect slow burn horror movie.
All right, Steve, you're number two.
All right. Well, I'm thrilled that I get to make this pick at my number two. And quite frankly, this is my favorite Stephen King adaptation. The only reason I have The Shining higher was because I wanted to make sure that I got it before someone else.
But playing to the people.
For my second pick, I'm going to pick the 2007 adaptation of The Mist, directed by Frank Darabont. This movie is so, it's another one that's very, it captures the best of Stephen King with the social interaction, the paranoia, are we our own worst enemy? And one of the most devastating endings that I ever have seen in a movie.
Breach.
Oh my gosh. It's, and such an incredibly brave choice by Darabont, and one that Stephen King applauded. And as a bonus, if you own the Blu-ray, like I do, treat yourself at some point to watching the black and white version, which is included, because that just takes up the tension and the beauty of the movie even more.
This was also one of Stephen King's favorite adaptations. I mean, this movie is just so unrelenting in its storytelling, and it nails it in stride. I don't, you know, the creatures might look goofy, but it's not the creatures that you're scared about. It's the human.
Yeah, The Mist was probably one of the first things I read of Stephen King, and I actually wrote an adapted screenplay of it in college, and I am a lot cooler on that adaptation, probably because it's such a personal thing for me. It was actually one of the first dates I took my wife on when we got together. The other was Iron Man. That one went much better. But it never connected with me in the way that I, you know, when you imagine something in your head for going on 20 years and then you see it on screen and it's not quite what you imagine. When we got to the end, I just thought it was cruel. And I think it was the way it developed so instantaneously. I think if he had done what he did with executing everyone in the truck, and then we see him wandering for a while, but to have him do it literally seconds before the army shows up, I just kind of, it felt like a little bit of a middle finger to me.
Well, but, I mean, if you're going to do that to the audience, why prolong it? It's very literary. It's a very literary device, and the quicker that you deliver on that twist, to my mind, the more effective it is.
Oh, it's effective. I won't argue that. It does exactly what it was intended to do. It's just whether I liked it or not. Ryan, you get two picks, buddy.
All right. So for my first pick, both of these picks, I'm going to dive into the world of horror. Shawshank is just such a classic movie, but now I'm getting into Stephen King. Bill, you had mentioned, you know, Stephen King, when he writes about fear, he came up with it. I'm going to talk about how Stephen King handled grief. And of course, that takes amazing shape in the film Pet Sematary from 1989. I'm not talking that recent garbage. Pet Sematary really harnessed what grief is and Mary Lambert's excellent storytelling. The cast is great. And Miko Hughes, did I say that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
As the little boy, at first I played with Judd, then I played with Mommy, now I'm going to play with you. I mean, it just bodes creepiness. So
little kids are creepy, dude.
Yep.
You're learning that firsthand.
Right.
I was very, very disappointed with the new adaptation because I thought it on paper, it fixed some things that were problematic in the first one. And then it just created newer, worse problems for itself. I was super bummed when I came out of that movie. All right. What is your return pick?
My return pick is where Pet Sematary first started everything out with a cat. I'm going with a big, bad, sick Bernard in Cujo. I love this movie because Cujo is very realistic. We are surrounded by pets, and pets can get rabies and turn on you in a minute. But when you're stuck in a car because your car breaks down, even much more of a nightmare.
And I just learned that they employed a dude in a dog suit.
Yep.
For some of the scenes in that movie.
This is one I have to admit I have not seen, and that is by choice. I am such a dog lover that the thought of seeing a dog made into an instrument of evil and death just... It's sadly a non-starter for me. So call me a wimp, but no, I'm going to take a hard pass.
Understandable. All right, Steve, we are to your third pick.
Really? Already?
All right.
My goodness. I'm going to go with 1983 flick. Starring the great Christopher Walken. And The Dead Zone is my next pick. It handles the supernatural very well. Christopher Walken doesn't chew scenery as he would in a lot of his later performances. In fact, he creates a very sympathetic character, and it does the mystic elements that Stephen King is known for so well. So that's my pick.
Yeah, I think The Dead Zone was probably the last Christopher Walken performance that wasn't Christopher Walken.
Mm-hmm. True story.
All right. I honestly didn't think this one would get back to me, but I am going to go with the absurd and wonderful The Running Man.
Oh, nice.
Starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. Which this had nothing. This is, if we're going by accurate adaptations, this movie doesn't apply. True. But taking the idea of chasing a man down in a reality TV game show type way. It's delicious. It's the best pro wrestling movie that's ever been made. You know, you have these over the top characters, over the top violence. Oh, I'm forgetting the name of the actor who played the host.
Richard Dawson,
yep. Of course, had one of my favorite moments in any Stephen King adaptation ever is when there's a lady in the audience and she's getting prizes as the match is developing. And we hear Running Man, the home game, and see him pass it to her. I absolutely adore that moment. So Running Man is mine, I'm happy to say.
And really prescient as far as crazy reality TV goes.
You know what? It might be early, but I'm going to go for it. I just finished it. I like what this ended up being. I am going to go with the Castle Rock television show on Hulu.
Good pick.
Which takes the repeated setting of the city of Castle Rock, takes lots of characters sort of from his books and creates this wonderful stew with it. And what I appreciated most about it is the Easter eggs are there for Stephen King fans, but mm-hmm. this is its own story that it's mm-hmm. telling, that very much keeps with the spirit of his shows. Well, one of the things that sort of irritated me about the Marvel movies lately is after the fact pointing out all these little things were in the background. It's like, okay, I mean, that's cool, but does it serve the story? And that sort of those call outs never took precedence over the story of Castle Rock. And I'm excited to see what they do with the second season, with bringing in characters like Annie Wilkes to the mix. Really good show. I don't know what sort of audience it has. I didn't watch it until about 2 weeks ago, but I was really, really, really happy with it. Very cool idea. Very cool execution.
I liked it. The fact that it's not really Stephen King, but inspired by Stephen King, makes it a little problematic for me, but I sure. did have a good time with the series.
At least it's not Lawnmower Man.
Oh, yeah. Thank God for that.
All right, Steve, you're halfway home here with this pick.
Well, I thought that I was going to be the first one to introduce a television adaptation, but you took that with Castle Rock. But I'm still happy to select the 1994 miniseries, The Stand. This one is a pretty easy pick for me because The Stand is my favorite Stephen King novel. So obviously that's going to give it some points for me. But they did The Stand, the miniseries, does a lot of things right, from the casting to being able to tell the story over the course of several episodes, which is necessary for a work of this length. And it was just fantastic. And I'm happy to add it to my roster.
Yeah, it's been a while, but I know that was a big deal when TV decided, ABC decided to take a shot at that one. All right, Ryan, two picks for you.
All right, this is where it gets a little tricky and mm-hmm. interesting. So my first one, since everyone's going on a TV kick, I'm going to go on a TV kick. I have to go with. There's a lot of Stephen King adaptations for TV, but I have to go with the one that is, I'm not going to say the best, but definitely one of the best, more well acted, and that's It. I'd say that purely
on. That's going to be my next one.
I'm saying that from 1990. I'm saying purely on the principle of Tim Curry and the adult cast. So it's, right now we have It Chapter 2 coming out, so we'll see the adult cast. But the losers in It Chapter 1 were definitely better than the kids in, this adaptation. But, I mean, the adults, you have,
John Ritter.
John Ritter, Annette O'Toole. That's it.
There you go.
You got Tim Reed, Harry Anderson, Richard Thomas. Richard Mauser. I mean, all these guys were excellent in this movie. But we cannot say anything except for Tim Curry. He will give you nightmares even when he's not in his makeup or in that famous picture where he's just smoking a cigarette. I mean, this guy was Pennywise the clown. As much as I love Sarsgaard as the new It, you can't beat Curry.
Actually, I was going to mention that photo. That's one of the best things that the internet has ever given us, as far as I'm concerned, is that image of Tim Curry in full makeup and costume, smoking a cigarette, holding an umbrella in the rain on location. It's just one of the best images ever.
Yeah, I don't know if my parents failed to record the second part of this miniseries, but I just recall watching part one over and over and over again. I could not tell you anything about the grown-ups that isn't maybe cribbed from the trailers for the new one. Like, I just remember nothing about it save the cast. All right, coming back, Ryan, one more.
My next one is gonna have to be Brian De Palma's Carrie. no ifs, ands, or buts. Sissy Spacek, Piper Laurie. You want to talk nightmare fuel? Piper Laurie as ultra conservative Christian right wing. I'm going to kill my own daughter because she had her period. I mean, that's just, it's crazy, and she's a nutbag.
Steve, I seem to recall you gasping, or the Facebook equivalent of a gasp, when I said that I was not a fan of the De Palma Carrie.
It did surprise me because it is so iconic. I would have to ask you what you thought of the remake with Chloe Grace Moretz.
Or the TV version.
Never saw the TV version, but I deliberately watched the remake first because I didn't want, you know, the first one is so iconic. I felt like I couldn't necessarily give the new one a fair shot unless I watched it. I think the acting is better in the new one.
The acting's better?
Yes, I think Piper Laurie. I should qualify all this. My wife, Carrie, like, wrecked her mind as a child. Like, everybody has that one movie that just, you know, sticks with them and gives them nightmares for days upon days upon days. Carrie did that to her. And when I told her I was going to watch both of these for this draft, you know, she's like, well, let me know, you know, what you think. And I told her if she watched the old Carrie now, not as a 10-year-old, which you shouldn't do, I think she would laugh at Piper Laurie's just, it's campy. It's, you know, and the, I think the new one does a better job of treating the religious fears of her mother more realistically than the other one did. And I'm going to be perfectly honest. The first shot of the old Carrie is the most perverted shot I've ever seen in a mainstream film. And I couldn't get over it. I just felt icky right from the start.
Yeah, that was kind of unfortunate.
Volleyball? Like, you have a problem with volleyball? I'm just kidding. I know you're referencing the shower scene.
He made me question I was like, volleyball? What?
They play volleyball outside and they go to hit the shower.
But I am fully aware, as the honorary Front Row Network contrarian, that my opinion of the reverse order of the Carrie films is not typical. Steve.
Boy, this is so tough. It would be very easy for me to go one way, but I'm going to go with personal preference, back to the realm of TV. I'm going to pick the Hulu adaptation of 11/22/63.
Ooh, good call.
Okay, yeah.
For several reasons. One, I love, it's another one that I just love the novel. The novel is a fantastic read. And For much of the miniseries, they absolutely nailed the tone, which impressed the hell out of me. I'm also a sucker for time travel movies or TV or whatever. Right. It's my favorite subgenre of my favorite genre, which is science fiction. So those two things together and a really fantastic performance by James Franco make it a very enjoyable watch.
Oh, shoot, is it my turn?
Well, Mally, we can skip you. No.
I'm good. So I passed up on this early, and I guess it was a good idea, but so I'm going to go with Stand By Me.
Ah! And that's the one that I almost picked.
It's sort of a spiritual... Yeah, it's sort of a spiritual sister to It Chapter One, but just an extraordinary cast, a remarkable story, and of course one of the most iconic story scenes of any movie ever.
We hit them all, and we all got one. But Stephen King has gone on record and said he has three favorite adaptations. It was Shawshank, Stand By Me, and The Mist. So we all got one. But Stand By Me is probably one of his best coming of age stories without any horror.
Which movie do you think fewer people know is Stephen King? Stand By Me or Shawshank?
I don't know. That's a toss up.
I would guess Shawshank.
Yeah.
Simply because Stand By Me came first.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not going to say anything. I'll wait. I don't want to say anything.
Okay. Blah, 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 blah. It's still there. It's the only movie I have left in my top two tiers. So I'm going to go with The Green Mile. Not as well received as Shawshank was. It was sort of the follow-up to Shawshank for Frank Darabont. But an amazing cast. A remarkably quiet tale from Stephen King. And it's in honor of its... Or giving all respect to its source material, it was Stephen King trying out the sort of serialized novellas. He released it in five briefer parts, which I thought I wish more authors did. I think that's kind of a cool idea. Ryan.
Well, remember how I said I was going to wait? Well, I've waited. I mean, Stephen King can write prison stories. I mean, he's very good at what he does. And this is what I was going to refer to because I had Green Mile on my list, and that was going to be one of my next picks, so thank you for that. But the dude can write prison very, very well. I mean, I've read Shawshank and the movie are so alike. It is crazy. And then the adaptation for The Green Mile is just the same. I mean, Frank Darabont has a nose because he also did The Mist, but he has a nose of adaptating, and it's really well done.
Okay, Steve.
Well, boy, again, I'm torn. I'm actually going to go lower on my depth chart than I thought I would. And this is my dark horse pick, my out of left field pick. But it just creeped me out so much. I'm talking about the 1998 film Apt Pupil, which contains just some horrifying, terrifying performances. Ian McKellen as a Nazi war criminal in hiding is just magnificent. Seeing the weight of his past actions weigh on him until he snaps and becomes the terrifying figure that he was originally. And I know that there's a lot of baggage associated with this movie and the production of it. But my gosh, is it horrifying on a purely psychological level.
All right. Can you get two, Ryan? Can you manage it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I got a list for days. my backup list is ginormous. Stephen King, he really likes to create his own monsters. But there's one monster in particular that he wrote about, and it's actually one of my favorite classic movie monsters. Of course, I'm talking about Silver Bullet, the werewolf film. That is my crazy off-the-wall pick, and I'm sticking to it because when you have Gary Busey, you have Gary Busey. But this has got Corey Haim and Everett McGill as the werewolf. And it's really good horror in the fact that you've got a werewolf that rip people to shreds, but when they go hunting for it, it takes a bat and beats the crap out of someone. So, I mean, it's great.
I think Silver Bullet needs a little more. We need to dig in a little bit more. Corey Haim plays a disabled boy who has a gasoline-run
wheelchair
that outruns the police.
Yeah, I haven't been able to luck my way into getting that model of wheelchair.
It is bonkers. Like, Gary Busey is the least crazy thing about this film.
He shoots... The way they identify who the werewolf is because Corey Haim shoots a firework at the werewolf into the eye, and so then the priest is walking around with an eye patch. I mean, this movie is great. I love it.
It is not to steal from Lou Hare, but it is the type of movie that
is a guilty pleasure.
Is a guilty pleasure, yeah. Mm-hmm. With a room full of people and a lot of alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
It is a special unseen Stephen King joint. Good pick.
And I don't know if this will come up later or not, but it makes a good pairing with Maximum Overdrive for sheer ludicrousness and drug and alcohol influenced writing.
Yeah, oh, yeah. If you want a cocaine inspired double feature, Silver Bullet and Maximum Overdrive are there. That's a winning combo right there. All right, Ryan, follow up on that.
All right.
That chaotic 80s mess.
You know, Stephen King, like, you know, he's all about doing his own thing when it comes to creating monsters and terror. And he's got a certain knack for machines. I'm not talking about the Mangler. I'm talking about that classic Buick car, Christine.
Good pick.
Christine.
John Carpenter directed this film about a nerd who discovers a vehicle that has it's possessed. And it's just crazy because, you know, you never think that a car could hurt you without somebody behind it. But here's a car that possesses itself and can choke you from the inside or run you down. It's
as perfect a choice for John Carpenter to adapt.
Yes.
As you could find in Stephen King's library.
Is that the only collaboration that King and Carpenter have done?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's shocking to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a... It's interesting when you look at the list and just see how...
He's worked with a lot of directors from the horror genre.
Yeah. And it seemed like from 76 to 80... We'll go 76 to 86. That decade, it was just adaptation every year, sometimes two a year. Then the 90s got kind of weird. Like, that's when Lawnmower Man came out and Stephen King did Sleepwalkers, and you get some, like,
don't not Sleepwalkers, man.
it's of a piece with the 90s. Dolores Claiborne came out at that time, and mm-hmm. I think, you know, when people were used to Stephen King being a certain thing, a movie like Dolores Claiborne doesn't, that's not going to put butts in seats.
No, it's a performance movie.
Steve, your penultimate pick.
All righty then. Well, this is another case of me holding back in an earlier round from picking this, and it still is here for me. Before The Stand and before It, there was a miniseries that Stephen King did that gave a lot of people nightmares in 1979, and it's Salem's Lot.
Yep.
Where else would you have David Don't Give Up On Us Baby Soul being the point of view for the audience? And there's the one iconic shot of the hovering vampire boy that just gave people the willies. And I think this may be one of the most Stephen Kingy or Kingian adaptations because I think it's stuck in a lot of people's minds.
Yeah, definitely. And they tried to do it again with Rob Lowe.
Yep.
In 2004.
Yep.
All right. Swing and a miss.
Yeah.
Points for trying. Okay. Well, my last two picks.
Ooh. This should be good.
So I know what my last pick is. I really want to go with an anthology because he had a couple. They were adapting his short stories with a few movies like Creepshow 2. But I have to go with the one that I've seen, and that is Cat's Eye. Honestly, one segment alone is worth the price of viewing on that, and that is James Woods out on a ledge with a, with a pigeon just ruthlessly pecking him. Has to be seen to be believed, especially when you're, you know, James Woods is taking a bit of a turn late in his career as a human being. And I think it would be just such a delicious thing to watch nowadays. Just this guy and this the rat version of a bird just pecking at him for a good 30 minutes. I absolutely love that that middle chapter of that adaptation.
Probably the most laughable thing for me is that little gnome thing that's running around. God, I can't remember what segment it was, but it's looks
the
like,
last one with Drew Barrymore.
Yeah, yep. It looks like a lawn gnome that is looking for a place to go.
Yeah, it was stealing her breath.
Right.
And then the cat comes and
saves the day.
Yeah, didn't it have like a little like dagger too?
Right.
Which for no freaking reason.
Nope. Gotta make it look like the cat did it.
You know what? I'm getting sentimental. I think I may have to go I may have to go hunt down Cat's Eye. My final pick, I don't know. I may be the only person that remembers this, but I spoke of how The Mist was my favorite piece of Stephen King work that I obsessed over. Sometime in the 90s, there was a cassette tape that was released, which was a 3D audio drama of The Mist.
Wow.
And it had, if you listen to it with headphones, you could hear like the tentacles sliding behind your head. Like it was VR without the visual. And for me, it's still the definitive adaptation of The Mist. I don't know where you would find it now, but I mean, it was a full cast production that did these really interesting 3D sound things. And one of my favorite moments was in the 80s, Stephen King would sometimes get paid for slipping in products into his works. And there's a point in The Mist where this mutant bat crashes into the spaghetti aisle. And one of the lines is, "Oh, it just crashed into the spaghetti aisle. There's Prego and Ragu everywhere." And I could just hear, you can just hear the cha-ching in Stephen King's head as that little product placement was on there. But I, you know, it was, some people were burning up tapes of, you know, Public Enemy and more popular things like that at that age. I was listening to the 3D audio play of The Mist. So that is my final pick.
Believe it or not, I think you can get it on Amazon.
No kidding.
Yep, I just looked it up. I've got The Mist in 3D sound.
Yep.
There's a CD version available of it. I believe it's used. I'm not sure. But it's it's Amazon Prime. No, it isn't used. It's on Amazon Prime. Speaking of product placement.
Oh, yeah.
So I may have to check that out.
It's an interesting, honest, and it's an interesting but dated experience, but probably the most sentimental I have for any of Stephen King's works. So, Steve, wrap up your team, buddy.
Boy, I could, like, put so many in this final spot. I'm going to avoid the temptation of throwing in Dreamcatcher, even though I love that. Talk about a guilty pleasure.
It's got butt demons.
It's got evil alien butt demons in it.
Yep.
And Morgan Freeman chewing a hell of a lot of scenery. So I'm talking a lot about a movie I'm not picking.
It needed to be mentioned.
Yeah, it definitely needed to be mentioned. Yeah. Anyway, I digress. I'm going to pick one that I think is really criminally underrated, and that is 2007's 1408.
God darn it, Steve! Oh.
Yes.
My last pick.
Not anymore. John Cusack does a wonderful job in this, as does Samuel Jackson. I love the fact that, a whole movie basically in a hotel room, but it goes so much farther than that. And, I was just fascinated by this movie. Was on the edge of my seat the whole time, and I think it gets a bad rap, and that's why I'm putting it on my roster.
Yeah, with a lot of, I mean, as long as John Cusack has been in the business, he could have phoned 1408 in. He's in a room by himself acting his ass off.
Yep.
For almost 2 hours. And as someone who goes back and forth, he's in one of my favorite movies, High Fidelity. But then there are other movies where you can tell he's just kind of getting paid. I was super impressed with what he did in 1408. He's not only just acting with seriousness, but he gets put through the ringer.
Yep.
In that movie, up and down and hot and cold. And very good final round pick. Ryan, you're upset. Let him have it.
God, I don't even know if I want to go on anymore. Okay. So I'm sitting here looking at his list of, you know, miniseries, the Tommyknockers, Langoliers, you know, Rose Red, Storm of the Century. I'm like, no. I'm looking at Dolores Claiborne, even though you knocked. I think it's one of the best acting movies out of all of Stephen King's work.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. I was not knocking it. I was saying it
came out in time.
It went a different direction than people were used to seeing Stephen King properties.
Okay, yeah. You know, and I love King, but okay. So I'm thinking here. I'm like, okay, do I go the same route as Steve with the whole person trying to discover, or do I go with my roots here in the Midwest? And I think I'm going to go with my roots here in the Midwest because it's probably one of the most iconic horror movies because creepy kids are creepy, and I'm going with Children of the Corn.
Children of
quality.
The Corn.
Quality pick.
So it was either that or Secret Window. But Children of the Corn, I think, is a better pick. Kids running around trying to, you know, bring Satan and all his good works. I mean, it's crazy. And living in the Midwest with all the cornfields that we have really did a number on me and my kids.
Well, and let's not underplay how creepy the lonely highways can be in Iowa and Illinois when it's just rows of corn either way. You look down a row, it looks the same. I remember going to a Patton Oswalt show in Iowa City a few years back, and he mentioned that he can't believe that any murders get solved in Iowa and Illinois because it's just open space, endless open space, that bad things can happen in any corner. So, yes, Iowa and Illinois can be terrifying too, as Children of the Corn attests. We have our teams. Let's run them down real quick. Ryan Luton's Shawshank Redemption, Pet Sematary, Cujo, It, the TV adaptation, Carrie, the 1976 version, Silver Bullet, Christine, and Children of the Corn.
Yep.
Steve, The Shining, The Mist, The Dead Zone, The Stand, 11-22-63, Apt Pupil, Salem's Lot, the 79 television miniseries, and 1408. And for me, It Chapter 1, Misery, Running Man, Castle Rock, Stand By Me, The Green Mile, Cat's Eye, and the 3D audio radio play of The Mist. So those are our teams. And who knows where It Chapter 2 is going to fall. I'm going to guess in the top three rounds. But that's just because I love what Andy Muschietti did.
I think so I'm going to agree with you. The fact that so they've got that first one. It dancing on Paul Bunyan's statue, like in the books and the balloons. I mean, I wish I could have Tim Curry dancing up there.
So we're more prepared this time. If you want to vote, please vote for the best team of Stephen King adaptations. We're going to have a survey in the show notes for the podcast. You can also go to Twitter at PCDN Podcast. The pinned tweet will have a place where you can vote. And Pop Culture Draft Night on Facebook, you will be able to vote. I will give you gentlemen the last words selling your team. Ryan, let me know. Let them know why they should vote for you.
Shawshank Redemption is a very classic Stephen King. I mean, I've read the short story, and it's literally read telling a story, and the story is the movie. Great adaptation, great human storytelling. But if you want fear, you've got a possessed car, a werewolf, a girl with telekinesis, a rabid dog, ghosts coming to life to bring people to Pet Cemetery, kids wanting to bring back Satan, but more importantly, you've got Tim Curry coming out of your shower, making sure you're nice and clean.
I think the capper is Tim Curry coming out of your shower.
That's why I saved it for last.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely. All right, Steve, sell it.
Ryan put together a really solid roster in terms of the most Stephen King list, I would think, from top to bottom. I would argue for my list based on some off the beaten path picks from several different genres, and in revisiting my list, boy, I would love to do a marathon of my own movies, just because there's a little bit of everything and something for everyone.
Thanks, Tom. It is diverse.
You have TV, you've got streaming, you've got movies, but only I have a 3D audio play.
That's true.
And that's my mic drop. I'm walking off with that. Well, thank you guys for joining me. If nothing else, this gave me a chance to go back and revisit some Stephen King properties that I haven't watched in a long time. And that is an interesting journey, my friends.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Again, show notes. You can vote for your favorite team at PCDM Podcast on Twitter and Pop Culture Draft Night on Facebook. Thank you, gentlemen. Godspeed to you.